This is He Said, Ella Dijo with Eric Winter and Rosalind Sanchez.
Hola, Eric Winter, ¿cómo está?
Bien, bien.
Me alegro tanto. Te ves muy lindo hoy, fíjate. Tienes como un brillito, una cosita.
¿Cosita?
¿Una cosita? ¿Tú tienes una cosita?
No entiendo.
I'm joking. Anyways, I'm joking.
I'm lost.
Be lost. Listen, we're going to do something a little different this time because we have a guest that we believe she has a lot to say.
Cristela
Alonso.
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 Cristela Alonso. She made history in 2014 when she became the first Latina to create, produce, and star in her own network sitcom, Cristela, for ABC. During that same year, she split her time between LA and New York City to serve as one of the ABC's favorite guest hosts on their hit daytime talk show, The View. And in 2017, she made history again when she became the first Latina lead in the Disney Pixar film when she voiced the part of Cruz Ramirez in Cars 3. She has a book. She has a Netflix stand-up comedy special. She does it all. She's next level.
She is.
Are you happy to have Cristela?
Super excited.
I was reading about, I've known her work for a while, but I was just reading interviews and I was doing some research and her life is, it's really incredible.
Yeah, that's what I can't wait to get into. I'm excited to hear what she's all about.
Yeah, and then next week, the next podcast, we will be talking about some interesting stuff between me and Eric Winter. You know Eric Winter?
Do I know Eric Winter? let's save that discovery for next week.
The big discovery. Okay, so vamos a hablar con Cristela. So, okay, let's do this. Thank you so much for joining us. We are so excited and we are so happy that you have all these things going on. You're always busy, but you have a lot of good stuff going on. I want to start a little bit from the beginning, Cristela. I believe, I was reading about you and it says that you were from San Juan, but Texas. I'm from San Juan, Puerto Rico. I was like, oh my God, we're both from San Juan.
You know that growing up for a little bit, I thought we lived in Puerto Rico.
Of course, yeah. That's yeah.
Funny. You know, like you don't travel as a kid. We didn't travel anywhere, right? So we were in San Juan. And when I found out about San Juan, Puerto Rico, I was like, oh my God, I was a little kid, obviously. Uh-huh. And then finally my brothers one day were like, hey, dummy, we're in Texas.
Where is San Juan, Texas?
Like relative.
San Juan, Texas is right next to Mexico, like okay. One of the most southern points in the state. It's 4 hours south of San Antonio. Everybody always says, when you're from South Texas, they're like San Antonio. I'm like, nah, man, that's a whole other world down there. That's like 4 hour drive south, right next to Mexico. You can walk over the bridge to Mexico.
Oh, right.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. Wow. Super close. Yeah. How many siblings do you have, Cristela?
I have two brothers and a sister, and I'm the youngest one.
You're the youngest.
I'm the youngest, but because of my job, I'm the one that takes care of people.
Of course. I understand that. I am the youngest and I have three brothers. So I grew up with a lot of men and I'm the little girl. I'm the little princess in the family and the one taking care of stuff. Well, not always, but.
Not always. Wow. Her brothers are going to have a heart attack.
No, I shouldn't say that. But I'm the one that my mom and my father, they call when there's an issue.
Yeah, she tends to be the buffer.
I've always been that person, when I was growing up, my mom kind of chose me to be the go-to for everything, And it's weird when you realize that you're the one that got that job, right? Because the job never stops, So, and it's funny because you could be, I live in LA, my brothers still live like in South Texas. Yeah. My sister lives in Dallas, but if stuff happens in Texas, I'm responsible for it.
That's amazing. I believe it. I get you, man. I get you. And then how was your, when did you move to LA? Or you went from Texas to where?
So I went from Texas to St. Louis.
Okay.
Then from St. Louis to New York a little bit. And then I realized I couldn't afford New York.
Yeah.
Then I went to LA. Then I moved back to Texas. And then I came back to LA and it stuck in 2005.
Wow. But did you want to be a performer your whole life? Was that always in the cards for you or?
Yes. I fell in love with theater. I watched the Tony Awards when I was about 8 or 9. And it was, I remember that year Miss Saigon was new. I think that West Side Story had a reboot. And to me, I didn't know what theater was, you know, being a border town kid before the internet, you know, I was just like, what is this? And I told myself, I'm like, this is what you need to do. Like, I don't know what it is, but you got to figure it out, you know? And my mom, you know, she was from Mexico, never learned to speak English. So we would watch the soap operas like Young and the Restless and Bold and the Beautiful and stuff. And I would translate the novelas for her in Spanish, you know, every day. And I would dress up and put little costumes on and like do my makeup and stuff. And I just always had it in me. And it's weird though, because growing up in a very like working class family, that kind of job, like this didn't even exist to me as a job, you know, it's like we were raised to use our hands, physical labor, you know? So the idea that you could have a job where you perform and you can write things, it just seemed so, in a way, luxurious to me.
And were you the only one that pursued the arts?
Oh, yeah. Yes. Yes. So, you know, it's that thing where I think my family doesn't know what I do. It's kind of like they see the end result, but they don't understand what it is, mm-hmm. you know? So like my oldest brother will always say, no, pues, as long as you're happy. I'm like, dude, I'm really happy. Like, I'm doing very
well. That's awesome. And were they supportive? To this day, they're very supportive and they're very proud.
You know what? They're very supportive as best as they could. Like for them, they really wanted to make sure that I was happy.
Okay.
They didn't understand it. It was that thing where I started doing theater in school and nobody knew what it was. My, my grandmother back in the day used to think that if you wanted to act, you would be in the novelas in Mexico. Mm-hmm. So she always wanted me to be like in a novela, and that's the closest they got to understanding it. Now it's kind of that thing where, I don't know if either of you have had this problem. My family doesn't get it to the point where I can tell them some great news and they're like, oh, okay. Well, I like this other show.
That's interesting.
Because to me, especially with my brothers, I am the little sister. And people don't understand. You can do whatever you want in life. You could be the biggest, but to them, you're always the little sister they grew up with.
Yes.
And it's not, you're never going to convince them that you're anything else. And honestly, I love that because it always could. It reminds you of where you came from.
It grounds you. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely.
It grounds you. And their concern is always, Cristela, are you happy? And I know this business, and I'm asking this, and it might sound like a loaded question, you know, but I'm just curious. Like, are you happy? And I'm asking because, you know, as a fellow performer, you know, I'm in the business as well. And I always knew what I wanted, like you, right? To the point that I left my country and I moved to the States with this dream. And you know, it's up and down, and there's victories and failures, you know, and it is pretty brutal out there sometimes, you know. So we have an incredible lifestyle if you do well, you know, and you people have this perception of you that you have it all, but are you happy?
You know what? I can honestly say that for the first time in my life, I think I'm the closest to being the happiest I've ever been.
Oh, good.
Because, you know, and it takes time, you know, and for me, you know, I grew up in a very strict Latino Catholic household where the big obstacle for me is that I have trouble kind of marketing myself, telling people what I'm doing, because in my family, it's like, well, you got to be modest, you know, so that right there is a big obstacle, you know, I have social anxiety. So people ask me, why don't you go out to events and stuff? I'm like, I really have trouble being around people, you know? And it's that thing where now I went to therapy, I go to therapy, and I understand that it's just something I needed to overcome, and I'm so much better with it now.
But what is it, Cristela? What is it? When you go out, you don't want to talk to people? Do they make you uncomfortable? Yeah.
They make me nervous. You know, it's always this thing where I always tell people that, I have low self-esteem because it has half the calories of regular self-esteem. you know, it's this thing where I think that especially as a Latina in this industry, we've been taught that the roles that are offered usually tend to be the same. Mm-hmm. You know, they're very similar, meaning that for the longest time, we haven't had a chance to branch out into other types of characters. Meaning, for example, I love science fiction. I'm a big nerd. Mm. And you never really got to have the opportunity to see a Latina be a big nerd, you know? And it's that thing, to me, I wasn't what people thought was the typical, like, Hollywood standard, you know? I was plus size. When I got my TV show, I had a crooked tooth, you know? It was that thing where, honestly, I didn't expect to ever get a TV show. I was doing stand-up. And the writing of my stand-up got me the show. But it is that mental thing where I start seeing people. And part of the business is just, there's so many stunning people and incredible looking people that just the actual vision of somebody being so gorgeous. And I mean that just even personality, their personalities make them even like better looking, just a better, you know, essence overall. That I didn't have time to really kind of settle into understanding the industry. I was really thrown into it.
Okay.
You know, the stand-up is different than Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't until now in the past couple of years where I started thinking, you know what? You've been consistently busy. And, you know, there are ups and downs. And even when there's downs, you understand that it's part of the job, you know? And for me, I finally realized that I'm kind of happy with where I'm at and what I'm doing and that I haven't been giving myself the credit. And that right there, that's a problem, because then if you don't give yourself enough credit, then you don't allow other people, other Latinas, other kids, anybody watching you, they don't feel like they're inspired. They don't feel like they don't get it from you.
Yeah, they don't feel worthy. They don't feel worthy.
Yeah, exactly. And you're taking away that attention, you know, from yourself and them.
Yeah.
I always think, we talked about this when we very first met, is that it's very difficult. And I think I was a little better at this than you, but living in the moment and like you said, appreciating your successes, because it's very easy to be like, I'm going to be an actress. I'm going to win an Oscar. I'm going to win an award. I'm going to do this. And it's like, you're shooting and everybody wants to shoot for the stars and you should, but you forget how difficult it is to go through each of those baby steps of just getting your first guest star, getting your first real acting gig. You know, I got my first pilot. Now my pilot's on air. I have my first series. Now the series actually went more than a year. Now I got a movie. Like, every little step is so difficult in this business to accomplish that it's never enough, even when you accomplish it, because you set out for that original dream of like, I'm going to be a star. Or
it's about enjoying the process, and people lose perspective of that because you have this goal. And that's all you see, and that's all you care about, you know. And years go by, and then when you look back, you're like, "Shit, I was pretty miserable." Instead of like appreciating the little victories and loving, falling in love with the process. It just as artists, because we're so heady, it's difficult to do that, and it takes a lot of maturity and experience and a lot of freaking praying, whatever, meditation, whatever you do, you know, to be able to center yourself to realize I should have enjoyed the journey a little more, you know.
You know, I also think that, you know, you also get used to the fact that even when you're in the moment, you don't get to enjoy it a lot because people want to know what's next for you.
Yeah.
What's next?
When they ask you, it's like, what's next? And it's like, well, I would love to just have this moment to enjoy it.
Exactly. Exactly.
You know? And it's that thing where the what's next, there's never an ending to it, you know? So it's that thing like, you know, when I go out to clubs or, you know, like to the comedy clubs to do a set, I've realized that when people ask me how I'm doing, they mean, what are you working on?
Yeah.
You know, and it's that thing where it takes away the humanity.
Everything. It takes away everything. Yeah, I know.
You know, and it's funny because I always say that one thing I also realize is that when people say that they want to be rich or famous, I always feel like it sets them up for failure because you never know how much money is enough and how much fame is enough. You know, so whenever I get asked, how did you know you made it? I always say the same thing. It's when I could put my card down for like auto pay on all my bills. that's when I realized I'm like, oh, I'm good.
I know the bills are getting paid. And speaking of that, I don't know if a lot of people know this, but, you know, I was reading about your past growing up. You guys went through some tough times, you know, your family, right? Like, it wasn't, you know, all peaches and cream. It was a journey. It was a process as a family, just getting to a place of stability, right?
Yeah, the first 7 years of my life, I squatted in an abandoned diner. My family was homeless.
Wow.
You know, so my mom found this like empty diner and she moved us in, and I lived there till I was seven. And, wow. You know, and it's that thing. We didn't have like running water. My mom used to cook. There was a house next door and the neighbor would let us use an extension cord. And my mom, you know, like 80s, she would get a space heater and she'd put it face up and she would cook on it, you know, and that's how we ate. You know, we'd take baths in the bathtub with a cup of water, you know, like when I was a kid, I thought everybody did that, you know, and it wasn't until I got older that I looked back and realized, oh, wow, you know, we lived in extreme circumstances. Mm-hmm. And I think that's also why, you know, I struggled so much coming into this business, because I didn't know how to live with more than just the bare necessities.
Oh my goodness.
You know, and it's weird but that also makes me so grateful. And, you know, it's like that thing where the joy that I have now, I think I realize that I'm finally allowing myself to live the life that I have now, you know, because for so long coming from nothing made me feel so guilty. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, well, oh man, how can I do this? Now I'm embracing it and it's awkward, but it's fun.
Wow.
Do you realize, like, I have here, you know, you made history in so many different areas. For example, being the first Latina to create, produce, and star in your own network sitcom, and the first Latina lead in a Disney Pixar film. Do you ever look back at Cristela and go, like, I've done a lot of shit, man? You know what I mean? Like, I've done a lot.
You know, there's moments where I can't believe it. But honestly, I have to be honest. I don't have those moments where I feel like I've done a lot, because I feel, again, I think that I'm constantly very hard on myself. Mm. So for me, it's just, it doesn't register. And, you know, I think that also just coming from the kind of family that I have, again, with like the modesty, everything, it just, you struggle to even think of yourself or what you've done in that kind of manner, you know, but I appreciate it and I love it. And, you know, but at the same time, I sometimes wonder, do I really understand it?
I want you to, because nobody else has done that. Nobody else that I can think of, you know, that has been able to write, produce, star, and do Pixar that I know you love, you know, and think about what other Latina, and there's a lot of Latinas killing it and doing fantastic, you know, and God bless him, and it's beautiful. But you have to sit back and realize what you've done and what you have created in the minds of other Latinas like me, that, you know what, it's possible. It's doable. You know, she did it against probably thinking against all odds, you know, and there you were. I know the experience wasn't maybe what you hoped for, you know, because I was reading and I remember when the show came out, and I remember after the cancellation, and I remember years later you coming out saying, wait, this equation doesn't add up, you know, because I brought this whole thing to the table and how come I wasn't getting paid or appreciated the same way as my colleague, you know? And things like that, it's brutal. And I'm sure it takes away a little bit from the victory, you know, because here you are doing something extraordinary and then looking back and going, ooh, but wait, what the hell was that about?
Like on paper, it's extraordinary. Yes. In my bank account, not that great.
Yeah. And it's unfortunate. Yeah. It's unfortunate, but I don't want that to take away from the accomplishment, you know? And hopefully it was a learning experience or something that just got through into your life, so it doesn't happen again. It's not going to happen again.
You know what? That's kind of what I've taken away from it, where it's like you look back and you realize, you know what? I'm never going to be in that position ever again. And that's, you know, and it's that thing where, you know, I always have this way of thinking where it's like when people say that their prayers are unanswered, I always say, they were. Sometimes the answer is no. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you got to learn from it, because it's no for a reason. The things happen for a reason, a learning block, everything. That to me was so much so fast that now looking back, I realized anything can change, even if you just have one different person that you didn't have back then. You know, mm-hmm. It just, the energy, personality is what people bring to the table. That changes everything. Mm-hmm. And I know that I'll never be in that position again.
100%.
That's so awesome. That's very valuable, man.
Let me ask you this. Going back, and I find it fascinating, and you know, kudos to your parents too, for like going through those difficult times as kids and kind of shielding you from what it was. Like it just felt normal. But going from that sort of an upbringing and then going into comedy, because some people might think like you'd be heavy and you have a dramatic past and it was trouble or difficult. Sounds like a very loving family, but like those difficulties growing up could just take you creatively down a dramatic path. You went, and I'm not saying you can't do drama, you can do everything, but you turned out to be a comedian. Did that feed a lot of your comedy? And was your comedy an escape in a way, or gave you a lot of creative liberties to just say, I'm going to make fun and laugh and enjoy what my upbringing was?
You know, the writing actually ended up coming when I was, I started out in theater, and then I had a voice teacher in like 97, 98, that was like, as a Latina, you can do West Side Story and Chorus Line. Rent had just started. So you know what I mean? It's like that thing, you know, so you're just like, wait a minute, but I've loved this all my life. That's all I can do, you know? So I did it. I did West Side Story and I did Chorus Line, and I'm like, I think I'm done. You know what I mean? And it was that thing where I started writing because I knew that if I was ever going to make sure in this business, there's no set path, but to give myself the best chance, I knew I had to write. And then I started thinking, what can I write? And all I thought about was my experience, my family, my upbringing. Then I realized that it was funny. Mm. And it was this thing where people don't want, I think there's a way in comedy to accidentally teach people about new experiences through comedy, through making them laugh, where later on, if they look back, they're like, oh, we did learn something about that. Mm. But it didn't seem like it was preachy or, and that's the way to do it. Mm. You know, it's that thing where I always say that the more specific we are, the more universal it is. So if I talk about, you know, I used to have a joke about how growing up poor, expiration dates were just suggestions, right? Like you just see it and you look at milk and you're like, ah, let me see, hold on, you know. That is true to me, but that's also true to a lot of other families that might not be Latino. You know, and that's the specificity of my experience, my past, allows other people to get it. Mm-hmm. So it was really kind of like accidental in a way that I was like, well, this is what I know about. So I started writing about it. And then it turns out that I just always liked to make jokes and it clicked. And that's kind of how it started. And I'm very thankful for it because it's just that thing where, especially doing stand-up, I got to the point where it was already just in me to make it funny that I thought, well, this is how I'm doing it. Mm-hmm. This is how it is. And I've never questioned it. And it seems to be working.
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely.
That's so awesome. I have a question for you.
Yeah.
Is there a question you are often asked as a Latina woman in entertainment that you wish it would just go away?
Oh,
yeah. Where do I start?
Sarah, how long is this podcast?
Give me that one. Give me like, stop asking me this BS.
No, you know, there's a couple. One is, I hate when people start asking about like representation when they realize that they've been asking the same questions for years. Mm-hmm. And I want to tell them, what have you done differently? Aside from just asking all of us what we think about representation.
Yeah.
Because you're asking me for a reason. So what are you doing about the problem? Except bringing up the article every, you know, also, I think that when we talk about like generalizing acting roles, like, you know, I know that there is a legitimate problem when we talk about how a lot of characters for Latinos, Latinas can be tropey, right? We talk about the gang member, the maid, everything. And I always say that it's not the actual character that's the problem. Mm-hmm. It's the lazy writing that comes with it. Like the maid can be amazing if she has a name. When you give her a name, if it's maid number one, you realize that she might just be there for filler.
Yeah.
But if her name is Esperanza, then you realize she has a heart and a soul. Mm. You know, so for me, it's always like, why are you asking us about roles when most of us didn't write the roles? You know, it's like, ask them. Like, you know, yeah. I also think that there's this idea, again, that with Latinas especially, we're always seen as like sex pots, right? I always say that for the longest time, Latinas have been like, first of all, the history of Latinos. We were around for like acting. Mm-hmm. We were around for Mayan and Aztec times. Then we all slept for hundreds of years. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, in the 70s, we came back. We were all drug dealers, everything, you know, whatever. With Latinas, you're seen as like the sex pot. And then you go hibernate for 20 years or something. And then you become the abuela. Right? And it's that thing where I'm like,
that's, well, that's okay. My case now.
Shut up.
Oh, listen, it's so funny because I was so used. I don't look my age, right? But I was used to, everybody had a perception of me, Rosalind, that the sex thing, you know, the whatever, because she's pretty and she's the way she carries herself and the cleavage and whatever. Okay. So I ran with it because I was, that's what you're going to give me. I want to work. So fuck it. I'm just going to do that. Then, but then maybe 5 years ago, I started getting like things to test, you know, on scripts that they were like the mom of a teenager and, you know, like, and I was like, when did that happen? You know, because it's like, why am I reading for somebody that is like 45, even though I'm 48, but I don't look 45. What the heck is going on?
No.
Oh my God. So now all I'm doing, and listen, I'm going to embrace it because it is what it is. I am my age and it is what it is. And people, I've been doing this for so long. So the idea of my name is, it might not be so fresh anymore, you know? So what do they give you? They give you the mom, the potential grandma that is still young. And I was like, this is really funny, but it is, listen, as long as the part is good, it took me a bit. I remember when at the Grand Hotel and Eva was one of the producers, Eva Longoria, which is a dear friend. And I got the call from Eva saying, Roz, you know, I'm doing this thing, Grand Hotel, and I really want you to be part of this. I just want you to be aware that you're the mom of two girls, you know, and they're in their 20s. And I was like, okay, so what do you mean? Are you comfortable with that? And for a second, I was like, oh, shit. Right? I'm going, what do I do? And then immediately I was like, you know what, Ross, why are you tripping? The reality is I could be the mom of girls that are in their 20s, you know? So why am I tripping? It's okay. Let me read it. If it's meaty, if I can do something special, I don't care if I'm the mom of ladies that are 20-something years old, you know? But it was my first time like, boom, brick wall. I'm going to be the mom of two ladies that are in their 20s.
But you know what? But to say this, I will say that because I started getting those roles, the mom and everything. And I'm like, wait a minute. I'm still like, I'm playing with Legos. You know, it's that thing where you realize that Hollywood's perception of age is very different from what life is really like. You know, so it's like when they think mid-40s, they actually don't think mid-40s. They're thinking like mid-50s, late-50s.
Yes.
So the perception of age is so off. Yeah. And that's what I think I constantly have to remind people of, is that it makes no sense. To me, what I think we need more of, which I want to focus on, you know, in the past year, I've made it a priority to really develop projects that actually allow, especially Latinas, you know, to have roles that maybe, you know, it's like, how about if you're a store owner, you know, and you just own a business,
exactly.
You know what I mean? And you don't have that connection, because for me, I'm 42, I'm not married, I don't have kids. I don't want to write roles where I'm the mother or anything like that. You know, mm-hmm. It's like, I want to write for the people like me. You know, what about the people that have the career?
Yeah.
What about the people that, you know, so it's a variety. It's about the variety of roles. You know, it's like that thing where you have to think about it and say, yeah, for the longest time, it did seem like you only went from sex pot to grandma. I mean, even the mother roles seemed kind of scarce. You know what I mean?
It's
which was really weird, you know? So it's such a weird thing that for me, I think that the thing that needs to happen more is we don't think about what they are, because mom is kind of what they are, but like, what do they do as well?
Exactly.
They're not just a mother. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, what do they do? Then you fill out the world of everything else. But it's like, you know, first of all, congrats on Fantasy Island. I love the show.
Oh, thank you.
It's incredible. I read the script, the pilot script, and I fell in love with it.
Oh, I'm so glad.
When I saw you got it, I was like, this is the most perfect casting I would have ever got. Like, I would have ever.
I'm so glad. That means a lot.
Because the show, it's so beautifully dark and stylized and everything. And, you know, you want to have that person that fits that. And I was so curious who would get it. And then when you got it, I was like, this is exactly, because that character, you don't know what she is. Mm-hmm. You don't really know the past. You don't, she just exists, you know? Yeah. And she doesn't have an episode where she's sending money to her family back home.
Yes,
you know?
Yes.
So it's just living, like Rourke living a life that she has, mm-hmm. and nobody questions why she has it.
Yeah.
And to me, like, that script right there was like, that's a cool script.
It's been really cool. It's been a really rewarding experience. And you know what? I do feel that the showrunners, you have to make it record. Yeah, 1 second. I do feel that the showrunners have purposely come up with this idea of maybe to differentiate from the Ricardo Montalban personification, which was so beautiful, you know, and iconic.
Yes.
They're giving her a little bit more of, maybe humanity is not the right word, but like, if you, the Lena Rourke of the pilot, right, compared to the one from episode 8, you know, she has had an evolution of, she's showing vulnerability and she's showing a little bit of compassion and little trickles of things that maybe the original didn't have. And at the beginning I was like, I don't know if we should deviate, but the reality is I appreciate it because it gives me the opportunity to do something a little bit different, you know, but I still want to keep 100%, God willing, we have a second season. I do believe that we need that element of mysticism and magic and wishy, and I want to know about her, but they're not giving me all that, everything, you know. So just to keep her, es como clase y aparte, you know, everybody's here, she's a little bit over here, you know, just to keep the mystery going. It's a delicious, it's been pretty incredible, and I'm glad that you enjoy it.
It's a great show. I mean, really, that character, just, it's such a great character that to me I'm like, more of that. Aww. You know what I mean, like, we need more of that. That's in order for this industry to evolve to where we are all seen on a different level than what we have been seen as for the past decades. Mm-hmm. You know, we need more of those roles, because you're right. The original Fantasy Island, which I was a big fan of, I used to watch, you know, like on Saturday nights, I think after Love Boat.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's like, mm-hmm. it was always like Ricardo Montalban. He was very presentational and very like, ta-da, like, this is the moment. But this reimagining of Fantasy Island, I want to see Rourke like have some feeling, connection to these people. And to me, it is meaty and it's great, but it's that thing where, like, again, I want to, like, instead of asking me questions about representation, ask me about more characters like that and why we don't have those.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, that's what, to me, that's what's interesting.
Yes, you're absolutely right.
Yeah, and that leads me into something else. You know, just talking about Latinas and Latinos in different positions and roles. You were filling in on The View for quite some time. And that's like, all of these talk shows is true. Like, I know you've done The Talk a handful of times, but there aren't enough Latinos and Latinas on any of these talk shows, really. What was your experience like on The View? I know you were at one point contemplating being a permanent member on the show, right?
Yeah, they offered it to me. You know, it was interesting. One thing I'll say is that I was allowed to be myself, which was a fantastic thing.
Mm-hmm. Very good.
What I liked about The View format is that they would tell you the topics that we were going to discuss beforehand, but they didn't want to hear your opinion. So
save it
you
for
really
the show?
Yeah. So you didn't really know what everybody else was going to think about the topic, which kind of lets it to be in the moment, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think that one thing I found, though, is that there were a couple moments where people that worked on the show thought that I would have a different opinion than the one that I had.
Interesting. Wow. Because you were Latina? They had already a preconceived
notion?
For
whatever reason. It doesn't have to
be. Well, no, I'm curious. Yeah. I'm curious if that's why, though.
Yeah, but it was not only because I was Latina, but because they didn't realize that Latinas are different. So, you know, they didn't realize that my experience as a Mexican-American is totally different from Cuban, Puerto Rican, Dominican. Yeah. Like, to me, it's like, I can't speak on a Puerto Rican point of view. I'm not from there. You know what I mean? Like, that's a completely different existence. Yeah. You know, it's like, we can be similar in certain things, but I would never want to speak for somebody else that can't, like, that's from another country, another area that I, you know, when it was this thing where I think they kind of thought that they assumed that Latinos were all the same. We were a monolith, right? We're all identical. But that was actually, that was what worked with me. The audience loved that I was very specific again with my, with my thoughts, you know? So it wasn't about being the voice of Latinas, because you can never be that, you know? And I think that it's exhausting to try to convince people that we're different, you know? And so for me, I loved my time on The View. I thought that my perspective, especially, you know, there were certain issues like migrant farm workers, you know, just certain things like border issues, you know, that I could really speak personally to, that I think got the attention of a lot of people that watched it. When I got offered the role, though, when I got offered the permanent job, I honestly didn't think I was ready for it, meaning where I was mentally, because that's, I wasn't used to people constantly attacking me on social media every day, you know? And it was this thing where I just didn't think it was healthy. And, but what I realized when that happened was that I realized that I was able to do it. I learned that I had a skill that I didn't know I had. So for me, that was like a learning lesson for me. But yes, I think that overall, the biggest struggle that I used to have was that I would say, I don't know what Cubans would think about that. Like, you know what I mean? It's like Cubans would be, you know, I go to Miami and Cubans think that I'm not Latina like they are. You know what I mean? Like, you know, it's like, because it's a different experience. So for me, it's teaching people that we're different.
Yeah.
When we should know, everyone should know that we're different.
That was what year that you got offered to be a host?
2015.
Now it's gonna be 2022. If they offer it to you next year, you think you'll be more willing and capable, or you still like it ain't for me?
I'm not yet. Not done yet.
Okay.
Like honestly, I think I've gone. I got to tell you, I did my Netflix special in 2016. It came out in 2017. The past 4 years were so rough for my community, meaning like South Texas, Mexican Americans.
Yeah.
I didn't feel like being funny. And I kind of was I limited myself to what I was going to do work-wise. I kind of went away for a bit and I started going around to communities to see how I could help. And I really started focusing on like, I found out I was diabetic, you know, and I started talking to lower income communities about like taking care of themselves, what programs are available. I talked to, you know, I worked with DACA. Like I really put myself in this other world where I thought that was more important. You know, I didn't want to write and be funny. It wasn't in me.
Interesting.
And then when I decided to come back and really focus on it, I realized, you know what I need to do? I need to really produce and write more right now and see what I can go and get so that I can bring people along and give them something that I wish I had had coming up. Because let me tell you, it is exhausting to have to write your own stuff sometimes. You know what I mean?
Do you want to direct, Cristela? At some point, you don't.
No, you know, I've always said that directing to me, that is somebody, directing is the kind of job that it's somebody's dream. You know, and for me, it's like, unless I felt completely connected to something, I would rather give the opportunity to somebody to like the little girl that used to try to shoot everything around their house and stuff. And, you know, it's like for me, give them the opportunity first. If there's a project that I wrote for myself, maybe. Mm. But like, to me, it's just, no, like, you know, for me, it's just like, I want to let other people like have a chance at that, you know?
Do you see yourself going back to network TV, producing, writing, and starting on your own show?
Yes, I do, actually. Okay. I just finished a project that I submitted to my reps that I've been working on with a couple of friends. And yes, I think I'm ready now.
Okay.
I wasn't ready. And I think that honestly, I think that we're at a different time now. Mm. I think we're all kind of, I think the industry's trying to figure out what's next. Mm. And the thing is that they're going to figure it out because we're going to tell them what's next.
I love it. I love it.
That's the best way to say it too. Let's talk about a couple of things coming up. You have Legends of the Hidden Temple, and you also did a movie with our buddy Mario Lopez. You did the Santa Fe, the Christmas movie. How was that? Was that fun?
Dude, that was so awesome. I wrote the movie. Look, I wrote the movie during lockdown, and it was this thing where I love Mario. Mario, like, I think he sweats happiness. Like, honestly, like,
he's always true.
We all love Mario. He's awesome.
Like, you can't, right? Like, he's just got that energy. He's like always like, hey, you know?
Yeah.
So like, to me, I loved working with him. I loved telling this story. The movie's called Holiday in Santa Fe, and it premieres December 10th on Lifetime.
Yeah. Okay.
And when we talked about it, we wanted to tell a holiday story that featured a Latino cast and to kind of show that we celebrate Christmas too. You know, it's that thing where you kind of have to remind people, right? Like it's so weird that, you know, it's always different people like, hey, hot chocolate. And I'm like, Latinos drink hot chocolate. Where are we?
You're right.
You know, so we had a lot of fun with that. I loved doing it just to kind of, again, you write the story. To me, I wrote the story based a little bit on my family, but also I wrote the story and then just made the characters Latino. Okay. You know, like once the characters were already drawn out, I knew it was a Latino story. So I wasn't writing has to be Latino, da da da. Mm-hmm. It's like, no, she is a businesswoman, the da da da, you know. Yeah, so it's that thing where that's kind of how I work. The Legends of the Hidden Temple, that's kind of like a reboot from an old 90s Nickelodeon show.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And what I love about it is that, again, you don't get to see a lot of Latinas host the competition shows like that, you know, where it's just action, everything. And what I loved is that when I talked to the executive producer, Scott Stone, he was determined to have a Latina in that role.
Oh, wow.
Like he wanted one. He was going to look for one. And he kept saying, like, has to be Latina. And I got the job. And I was like, and what I loved about it is that it's a show that used to be for kids that is now for adults. Mm. And what I love about it is that you can't really train for this show. Like a lot of people, look, I love shows like American Ninja Warrior. Sign me up all day.
Yeah.
You know, I also know that I could never run that course.
Yeah.
Right. Like, I'm sorry. I am not doing, like, I love the show. I don't love it that much. But it's that thing where if you work out and train, you have a really good shot of conquering that course. Mm-hmm. On this show, you don't really, you know, like being athletic, I guess, could maybe help you, but it's not everything because there's a round where we quiz you on stuff, you know? So it's a little, it's very rounded.
Okay.
And what I liked about it too, the show is, it starts off with four teams. We go down to one, but I didn't feel like it was really a competition show between teams. I kind of really thought that it was the teams against the temple that they have to run the final course with,
mm-hmm.
you know? Especially in this time right now, I feel like it's a great show to just watch for an hour and not think about anything else.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
That's what you want.
Escapism.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Seriously, like you just want to have a moment where, you know what? You just kind of watch.
Yeah.
And you know that it's just the message is for me, the biggest takeaway from the show is that it's a show that was, again, kids loved it. And for me, it's a chance for adults to go back and try to live out their childhood dreams. How cool is that?
That's awesome. Where do you shoot it, Cristela? In LA?
Yes, we shot it in Simi Valley.
Okay.
In the middle of summer. Like we created a jungle.
Like a jungle, yes.
Yeah, and oh my God, let me say, the best diet was shooting that shoot because I sweat so much. I was like, oh my God, I'm like on purpose, like why am I baking? And you know, it's so typical where the wardrobe, they love how it looks, but they don't ask you how it feels. Right?
Oh my God, that's funny. That was me in Fantasy Island. I was melting with that white suit at the beach in Puerto Rico during summer. I was like, guys, I'm melting. I'm dying.
I know, but they're like, but it looks so good on you. It looks so good.
Okay, I'll suck it up. It's okay. I look cute. Oh my goodness. And your book, was that like a life-changing experience for you just to write something about?
Yes. You know, it's called Music to My Years. I love music. And I listen to more music than I watch TV. And, you know, it's this thing where it was really interesting to write it. It was a lot more emotional than I thought it was going to be, but I thought it was necessary. You know, each chapter is one of my favorite songs and I break down why I love that song at that time of my life, you know? So it's kind of like a playlist to my life. And what I loved about it too, again, I don't know, like to me, I've always thought that my life is my life. You know, it is what it is. I write about it or I talk about it on stage. And I'm always surprised at how some people are very connected to it. Mm. And when you realize, when you get that feedback back, you realize, oh, it was a kind of important to write it. Just because I think that so many of us, we tend to be embarrassed. Like if we grew up, you know, in poverty, some of us are embarrassed by it. We tend to shun it. We tend to shun certain things that we come in, or we don't know how to celebrate it, you know? And then you realize that to me, I had this like epiphany, this realization where I thought everything that happened to me got me to where I am now. It made me who I am. So if it served me, then maybe it can serve other people too. Because look, I always say, especially being in this industry, especially being Latina, there's no set path. And it always feels like we're designing the blueprint while building the house at the same time.
Pretty much.
You know, and to me, it's like, this is what I did. And it's just to show you that you can do it whatever way that works for you. Mm-hmm. As long as you're yourself, that's going to help you, because this whole business is still kind of a toss up to a certain extent.
Mm-hmm.
It is.
Wow. I love what you're all about.
I know.
I love your story. This is one of my favorite podcasts that we've done this season.
You know what's crazy? I was listening to you and I'm just staring at you because you're beautiful. And I'm like, you're just so eloquent, right? And I'm thinking, this is my favorite podcast that we've done. It was just enlightening and beautiful, right?
Absolutely.
Thank you. Thank you for spending some time with us. You're absolutely freaking awesome.
A fierce talent.
Yeah. Oh, thank you so much. Yes. Thank you. You're both wonderful. I really had time. You know, it's funny. Sometimes conversations just click. And when they click, it really kind of gets you excited because you're like, oh, this is really fun.
Totally. You know? Awesome. I can speak to you with you for like freaking hours. I'd be like, so girl, okay, so let's talk about.
I know. I'm like, girl, let's talk about that white suit. Exactly. Who designed that white suit? Like,
I'd be like, we have so much to talk about. Like, I remember when this happened to me. Oh my God.
We have the podcast after hours.
I know. Anyways, thank you, Cristela.
Thank you for being with us.
Thank you, and blessings. And yes, you know what? Let's just keep it moving because you deserve to be the biggest thing.
Thank you
abrazo,
so much.
Mami. Cuídate.
Pleasure.
Bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye.
So there you have it, Cristela Alonso. That was incredible.
Yeah, I've never met her. I've never crossed paths with her, even being around you. I knew of her works or talent, and friends that have worked with her and know her. But I mean, what a real, I'm super, you know, it's such a trip when you do a podcast and you have guests come on and some, you know, some you don't, you just don't know what to expect. You just, you know, we're going to have a laugh, have a good time and learn about somebody new every day, which is one of the things I love about doing a podcast. But she was such a treat, such amazing energy and just the
smart and just to the
life
point.
Experience.
Yeah. It was
business experience.
It was awesome. I wanted to just keep talking and talking and talking forever because I feel that she's like an encyclopedia of experiences, you know, like really interesting stuff.
I want to work with her.
Yeah. Put it out in the universe.
She is a talent.
She's talented.
Yeah. I'm so glad that she could be a part of today's episode. That's awesome.
I'm excited.
Powerful Latinas.
Powerful Latina, baby. Respect. R-E-S-P-E-C-T.
Para que lo sepa.
Bye. I love you.
Love you too.
Subscribe to He Said Ella Dijo on iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere you get your podcasts.